It's the vibrator that has no equal. And now, Motor Bunny offers their thrusting sex machine, the Motor Bunny Buck. Enjoy a Man Whore podcast discount on any of their products with promo code BILLY40 at MotorBunny.com. The Man Whore podcast is sponsored by Alt Playground. APG is more than just a place to find couples to swap with. Alt Playground is a lifestyle community for all non-monogamous and sexually adventurous people to connect and share. And you know I started a profile. Join me over at altplayground.net. That's altplayground.net. Now let's get to the show.
Welcome to the Man Whore Podcast.
A PSA to all you oral enthusiasts, hygiene horn dogs, and kissing connoisseurs, no. Mouthwash is not the secret to making out with people during COVID. This is a very frustrated Billy Procida, and you are listening to the Man Whore Podcast. Oi, we'll get to that in a moment. Everybody, this week, oh gosh, so excited. It's finally happened. We have finally got on the resurrected porn star, Adult Entertainment's Phoenix risen from the ashes. We have on my one-time former Team BJ co-star, Siri Dahl, is on the podcast this week. And oh gosh, can't wait to share it with you all in a little bit. We'll also be hearing from the organizers of the Lesbian Bar Project. But first, let me just briefly, real briefly, address the mouthwash thing. Look, what did we say 2 weeks ago when I had on the fabulous Dr. Justin Laymiller? We talked about when you see a headline of any article and it says, new study suggests, take it with the entire container of salt. We said, read the actual article. We said, if you can, actually read a little bit of the study if possible. Yes, there was a study done recently trying to see if there were over-the-counter products that might eliminate COVID-19 from, say, a patient's saliva. They were trying to see if there's anything that's kind of like already available that's out there that might kill the virus. And they found some evidence that mouthwashes with a certain ingredient in them might eliminate the virus from a patient's saliva. Why is this not an excuse to all start doing mouthwash shots before we make out with our new Tinder date? Here's why. One, the study, they didn't even use the actual SARS virus that causes COVID-19. They used a similar virus for that particular study, okay? This study was not done on humans. This is not considered a human study. And the study itself, not peer-reviewed, okay? Not a peer-reviewed study. More study needs to be happening. There's actually an upcoming clinical trial at the University Hospital of Wales that's going to actually examine this more in actual patients. But no, I just want to be clear. Doing shots of mouthwash has not been proven to eliminate COVID-19 from your saliva. I know we're horny. I know we're restless, but this one's not the answer, okay? Cool. Got it? Great. I've got a link in the show notes if you want to read more, even though I know people don't enjoy reading very much. But here's something I think we can all enjoy very much. Lesbian bars, right? And some really wonderful people are putting together a crowdfunding campaign to save the few remaining lesbian bars in the United States. It's called the Lesbian Bar Project, and they are raising money and dividing the monies up to send out to all the bars that are struggling right now during the pandemic. And honestly, we're probably struggling before the pandemic too. So let's learn a little bit more about the Lesbian Bar Project with representatives Lily and Charles. All right, and I am here right now with Lily and Charles from the Lesbian Bar Project, who has they have a very noble cause right now to save the remaining lesbian bars in this country while small businesses everywhere are struggling, during this pandemic. Lily and Charles, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so why don't you all tell us a little bit just about the Lesbian Bar Project? I saw this tweeted, and I was like, you know, I'm a big Cubbyhole stan, as fans of the show know. So to know that there's like, oh God, there are more Cubbies out there and they're struggling. We got to save them. So what's the Lesbian Bar Project?
Yeah, so lesbian bars have been struggling for a long time, but when COVID hit, we all knew the service industry was really going to be struggling, and we know that losing even one more of these sacred queer spaces is just not an option. It has a really negative effect on our community when we don't have space, and because a lot of these places are owned by women, there is a gender bias in our country, and there isn't as much access to the finances that they need. And for a variety of reasons, these bars have been struggling. So we wanted to do something. And what we did was create a branded PSA. It's about 90 seconds long. And we kind of pay tribute to some bars that have closed, and we talk about what we can do to save them and respect them. We have executive producer Leah Delaria signed on, and she did a gorgeous voiceover for us. And now we have lesbianbarproject.com, where you can give donations, and we split it between these bars.
And are any of y'all bar owners?
So no, actually, we're all community members and are patrons, but none of us are owners or have any anything to gain from this opportunity.
Yeah, it's fully philanthropic. We're in touch with all of the bar owners, which has been really beautiful. But yeah, we're all filmmakers, storytellers, theater makers. So our way in to help this cause was making a piece of film content and creating a website and gathering these testimonials and stories from the real bar owners.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And how did y'all know each other to come together to do that? Are you all friends, or are you all part of different communities that have a local lesbian bar, or how'd that come about?
Well, we're all New Yorkers, and Charles met my roommate Erica in what show was it on, Charles? You were working together on some film project.
Yeah, we worked on the first season of Billions together and hit it off and became best buds. And then Lily and Erica lived together and were roommates for, I think, 7 or 8 years. And then,
oh my God,
who was the other co-director. She's a fellow filmmaker, and she and Erica got connected and became friends. And so we kind of all just came together to put this together and to put it out there.
Now, is it true that there's only 15 lesbian bars left in the country?
Ooh, actually, since launching, we have had a few more bars come out of the woodwork.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say more closed.
No. Oh, my God. Well,
Now it's down to 9.
It's down to just Cubby. No. I mean, God forbid, no.
God forbid it was only Cubby that was open. No one would fit.
Well, also, anyone that's been to Cubby, it's so tiny. Like, yeah. We literally need more space. No, we've had a couple more bars. The patrons from other cities and other towns have been coming forward and saying, hey, this is my lesbian bar. Why isn't it included? And the answer is, we did 6 months of research and we could not find these spaces. And to me, that's a part of the problem. I should know where these bars are. I'm invested in it. I want to support them. I want to love them. I want to uplift them. So the awareness raising side of the campaign is also really important to us. So we're in the midst as a team of figuring out how we're going to add these bars to the website. In the long term, is this website going to keep being updated as new bars open? And we have a lot of possibilities in that respect.
Now, does that have anything to do with, like, maybe, you know, in certain big cities, you can search lesbian bar and you find the one or two that are there. But, you know, if you're in Kansas, it's not that they're like hiding it, but like locals know it's a lesbian bar, but they're not like broadcasting that. Is that like an element at all?
I think it's a mixture, to be honest with you, because even as we were researching from New York to find these spaces around the country, if they're not popping up on Google or if they're not popping up in a way that we can, you know, get the expression or get the information, then they are a bit hidden. And everyone that's reached out to us has been from that specific city, whether it's in Phoenix or Virginia or what have you, that they're already aware because that's their home bar or that's where they go. And so it's the mixture of maybe they don't have as many, like, you know, geo tags or what have you online or in that search space, but also the way they identify or how they put themselves out to the public is a factor that comes into play as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, Lily, so how many are we up to now? How many have come out the woodwork?
Well, that's the question, is we're doing research. We're reaching out to the actual owners of the bars, because mostly it's been patrons going, hey, you left out my favorite bar. So we're in the 17 to 19 range right now. It's still under 20, which is sad. But I mean, honestly, when we started this project in late April, early May, there were 16 lesbian bars, and already one of those is not going to be able to reopen. So we went 16 down to 15, and now the fact that we're bumping up is like really exciting. Julie from Pearl Bar in Houston and Kathy Jack from Sue Ellen's in Dallas are not taking part in the crowdfunding portion specifically to make room for the bars that are struggling in a more dire way. So the fact that they made that choice makes us more excited to like really be blowing up these other bars and give them more attention, because some of these bars are not struggling in a way that they are like, we need this money right now. And some of them really are. So there's a whole variety of stories to be told.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that like, you know, queer bars are like even like more predominantly like gay male bars. It's not that like they don't struggle at all, but there really just are so much fewer really lesbian bar spaces. What's the difference? Like, what's the extra struggle of it being a lesbian bar?
Right. I mean, I don't want to get into like too controversial a territory, but when we think about gentrification in a neighborhood, who is it affecting? Usually people of a lower income, who tends to have a lower income because of wages. It tends to be women, assigned female at birth people of color. So there are just added challenges when we're talking about a gender specific space. I think that's part of it. Not to get into another sort of controversial topic, but we've gotten some weird emails from transphobic women, transphobic lesbians, who are really turfy and saying, well, I know the reason is because these bars are safe for trans people and trans people, la, la, la. You know, yeah, despicable. And to clarify, Lesbian Bar Project is only in support of lesbian bars that are trans inclusive. That is our official mission and statement. And anyone that thinks that having, I mean, a queered identity in terms of gender is something that's a problem for lesbian culture, like, we have no space for that in our project. And, you know, that's kind of our official stance. But I think there are a lot of problems. It's not just gentrification. It's that when you look at the numbers, and this is specifically from bar owners we've been in touch with, men or cis men tend to drink more, in quotation marks, or there's like, these bars might be more cash cows. They're making more money when it's a more cis gay male space. I don't know. I haven't seen that or experienced that. I've been a bartender, so I don't think it always does depend on gender what someone is drinking and how much they're drinking. But I think one of the problems is that these spaces have had to adapt in a really big way. I think the lesbian community and lesbian culture has changed a lot even since the 90s. And hopefully the spaces that we're trying to uplift are really pivoting to feed the needs of the contemporary current queer community.
So what's like your personal attachment to these queer nightlife spaces? Maybe what were one of your first introductions, especially both as New Yorkers? You know, what were some of your first experiences going to bars like this?
Lily, do you want to go first?
Oh my God. It's an endless story. I love nightlife. I'm crazy for it. Honestly, Charles and I have like a plan to go to a park and play music and just like dance. and I've done that a little bit on my own, because what I miss more than anything is the dancing. Anyone that has been to Stonewall on a Friday night, that is like the kind of lesbian queer space upstairs. And I mean, I've met partners I've loved on that dance floor. Like, it's a really important element for me. And certainly I've gone on a million dates at Cubby Hole. Ginger's, because I live in Brooklyn. So Ginger's is like really important to me. And I've spent many a New Year's Eve there. And actually I'm really sad, because we've talked a little bit about lesbian bars, but I'm thinking of going to Pride and Hell's Kitchen. And it's like, that's such an important part. And already a couple of those gay bars have closed, and it's like, I can't even think about it. Like, it's really, really upsetting.
my connection or, you know, how I got into this or these spaces, I am a gay man. And so I like to go into spaces where I feel safe and comfortable and welcomed for just me, not because I look a certain way or because, you know, someone wants something from me. I've had my own experiences in Cubbyhole and enjoyed it, but also felt a little bit like this is, I'm respectful of the space because this is for my lesbian sisters, but I don't necessarily need to be there unless there's something going on or someone invites me, because I don't know. I think that we as men can sometimes like go into spaces that are not catering to us and then feel, you know, offended because we're not being catered to. And I don't think that that's the point. I think it's about preserving these safe spaces for other portions or other aspects of our community. As Lily mentioned, like transphobia is not okay. And we're welcoming and inclusive of everyone that identifies under the LGBTQIA plus umbrella. And it's important for me to be a part of this. And in this is because we need allies. I mean, as Lily said, you know, the groups of people that tend to be lower income or have these different like economic disparities are women and are people of color. And, you know, those spaces are being impacted as well. And so it's about joining the fight together and saving our spaces together so that we can all have somewhere, whether we're commingling or not commingling, somewhere to feel safe and somewhere to let our hair down and just be who we are.
Yeah. And I got to imagine that those experiences have been so different in those types of spaces than, say, you know, Second Avenue at the 13th step or something like that, right?
It's like crazy you would say that, because when I broke up with my boyfriend in the Air Force when I was like 20, that was where I took my first lesbian date. And what the hell is wrong with me? I was, oh my God. I mean, I was 21. I was not 20. I was 21. Haha. I was dumb. I didn't understand. But yeah, exactly. Don't go there as a lesbian. I do want to say to Charles's point about like his involvement, just like such a shout out to Charles. The other, it's like a 4-person lesbian bar project team, and 3 of us are AFAB, like women adjacent folks. And Charles is our wonderful male ally, and his input has been so important. And honestly, feeling support from men is really important, because a lot of times gay men and gay women don't get that happening. And to have that on our team is like incredibly invaluable to our process.
Mm-hmm. And now, totally. And to that point, you know, I think people sometimes think a lesbian bar, sometimes even gay bars, something like that, as if like, well, I don't identify that way. I can't even go there. And like, so why would I even be supporting this? And Cubby, particularly for me, even Stonewall, and like basically any gay bar I've gone to, I have felt the most fucking accepted than anywhere I've gone, any type of bar. It was Cubbyhole. My relationship to it started off as just like, I had a old babysitter who realized that she's lesbian, and I was like the only one nearby who could go to Cubby with her. So I basically went and I babysat, and like I would sit at the bar with like the older butch chicks, and then like she would go off like making out with half the bar. It's like, you do you. Honestly, maybe a little too aggressively, because sometimes the friends would come up to me, hey, you know, you're great, you're sweet, can you leave your friend at home, but like you come back anytime. but you know, even like 5-6 years ago, I remember I went out to get drinks with like some podcasters, these 2 women and like their significant others, and one of them, like, I'm polyamorous, I'm not monogamous, and they like took an affront to that, one of these women, and like, and she had a few too many maybe, and then started like really being belligerent and like really started making me feel terrible about the way I live and love my life. And I kind of, at one point I just called it. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go because this is making me uncomfortable, so I leave. It happened to be, I didn't even put this together, but I happen to be a few blocks from Cubby, and I'm just walking. I happen to pass it, and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna go in, I'm gonna have a drink. And I went in there, and I was like sullying, and I was kind of like in the corner, I was trying to be by myself and like have a beer and just like come down. And like people came over to me and they were like, oh, you okay, you look sad, let's dance. I felt so included there in a space where, I mean, again, look at me, like, do I look like I'm the person Cubby's excited to have?
No, but that's everyone is welcome there if you're not a fucking dick.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful space. And so to find out there were more spaces like that closing even before Corona, you know, always made me sad. And so I was so happy to see that y'all put this together.
Mm. To your point, though, Billy, about you feeling the most accepted in these spaces, I think that that's a really huge thing to touch on because, you know, I think you're getting that kind of recognition and acceptance because everyone in that space has been somewhere and has not been accepted. Mm-hmm. Everyone in that space has had an experience where they've had to either, you know, defend themselves or internally, you know, define who they are and not be ashamed of it and still believe that they're deserving of love and valuable as a person. And so because you talked about like your first moment in Cubby and like, it can be turfy. It can be a little, depending on what you're going in there for. Like I've been into Cubby and even though I was with a group of mixed company friends, I'll say, I got some stares and I was like, it's okay. I understand like this isn't my space or like, but I'm also not going to come in and be belligerent, but And I don't know that everyone that, you know, identifies as heterosexual or wherever they are on the spectrum knows that that is a possibility. But I think overall, we just have to be open to each other because we're people and we have different thoughts and beliefs. And, you know, I do think that going into like lesbian spaces or gay spaces, it becomes this sense of like, yeah, we all want to be free. We all want to be equal because we're not being treated equal in the world that we live in. Versus, you know, someone just being able to kind of walk and be who they are without those restrictions.
But again, it's like Charles, as men, especially cisgender men, going into a space like that, you go like, there's an inherent respect we have to have for the space.
Exactly.
And I think some people, if they get some weird stares and they're not cognizant of what that space is and what it means to the people they're surrounded by, they think that person's just staring at me or they hate straight people. Or they hate this. It's like, no, like, it's okay if you got some bad stares because they get 1,000 more bad stares outside of that one space.
Exactly.
And I will also say, I don't think it's cool if like a guy walked into a lesbian bar and everyone started shouting at him to get the fuck out. Right. But if he walks in and starts being a dickhead and belligerent and trying to shove his way to the bar like he deserves to be there before anyone else. Yeah, now let's shit because that has nothing to do with gender. That's just someone being a dick. And I don't care how you identify, being a dick, never cool.
Yeah, and it's all about the respect. Like, even if as a gay man going into a lesbian bar, it's about the respect. Like this space isn't necessarily like created for me, but they're allowing me to be here and they're welcoming. So let me just be thoughtful and respectful of their space to make sure that, you know, there aren't any problems because there doesn't need to be.
And as the most privileged person on this call right now, it's like, I think just we're not taught to think that a space is like has those types of purposes because every space we walk through is pretty hunky dory.
Ding ding ding. Yes.
Generally speaking, not per person, everybody. Settle down. It's not you, the lowercase W white person, it's capital W white people, right? So et cetera, et cetera. It's not that I'm like walking through a bar apologetically, but rather just trying to be respectful of the space while having a damn good time.
Yeah, I think it's as simple as before you walk into a space, just have the sentence in your mind, like, this is a special, safe space for a lot of people. And as long as that's in your mind, like, you're not going to harm people. Like, you've made a commitment to yourself that you know it's sacred to the people who are already there.
So before we go, what are the what's the list? Can you give us a list of, like, the bars and where they are? So, because there might be people who don't even realize they had a lesbian bar kind of near.
Yeah. Charles, I'm going to make you do it from memory, right? No, I'm going to do it.
Down if you're ready.
I'll go ahead. So you can learn more about all of these wonderful 15 bars at lesbianbarproject.com. Those bars are A League of Her Own or Aloho in Washington, D.C.
Blushing What a Great Blue. Name. Yes. I'm going to interrupt with the names possibly. Yes.
Absolutely. Blush and Blue in Denver, Cute. Colorado. We have Cubbyhole in Woo! Manhattan in New York. Henrietta Hudson, Love, Love, Love in Manhattan in New York. We have Hers in Mobile, Alabama. We found this bar sort of like right before we were starting to launch. The owner, Rachel, is so incredible. And this bar has only been open a year. So we love, love, love Hers in Mobile. We need to support them. We have Ginger's in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. We have Gossip Grill in San Diego, California. Lipstick Lounge in Nashville, Tennessee. My Sister's Room, often called MSR. MSR in Atlanta, Georgia. Pearl Bar in Houston, Texas. Slammers in Columbus, Ohio. Sue Ellen's in Dallas, Texas. Toasted Walnut in Philly. Walker's Pint in Milwaukee in Wisconsin. And Wild Rose in Seattle, Washington.
Fabulous, fabulous. Lily, Charles, thank you so much for chatting with me, for sharing a bit about yourselves. Hopefully one day we'll be meeting at a Ginger's or a Cubby and being able to share a drink in person. Y'all two seem lovely.
Yes. Well, yeah,
thank you so much
for having us.
Thank you.
Me, myself, I donated $75 because I figured, hey, if I walked into any of these bars and had a little jar saying, hey, we're struggling, you got $5 extra, I'd give them $5. So I gave each bar $5. That was my contribution. One other thing is that they forgot to mention is that the Lesbian Bar Project is having a couple of virtual events, a couple of virtual fundraising events that you can enjoy. One is on November 22nd. It's an event featuring special guest Leah Delaria from Orange is the New Black, Rosie O'Donnell, yeah, and Roxane Gay, author of Bad Feminist. And then there's also going to be a virtual comedy show on November 23rd, hosted by the Dyking Out podcast. Ooh, remember Carolyn Bergier, past Man Whore podcast guest? She'll be hosting the thing. Former guest of the show, Emma Willman, she'll be on the show. A lot of other really funny comics. You can find out more about those events in the same place you can donate, lesbianbarproject.com. After you've supported lesbian bars across the country, hey, maybe you got a few shekels left over to support your favorite man whore with a heart of gold. What's up? Let's do a quick fan whore appreciation moment. Shout outs to John Newton, plumber extraordinaire. Hey, ladies, fellas, whatever genders he's into, hey, I bet he can unclog your pipes. Oh, thanks for being a member, buddy. And a thank you to Sarah Quambra Morgado. Ooh, I think this is our first official fan whore from Portugal. I know I get downloads in Portugal, but I think this is the first time we're getting some dollars and getting a couple emails from there. Thanks for supporting the podcast. Thanks for being a fan. I'm also happy to see that some of y'all are enjoying the deep discount. Ooh, the ambiguous black period of time event. Okay, yeah, right now, if you join up for an annual membership, instead of paying month to month, you're going to get a 15% discount. That's almost 2 months off your Patreon membership. That offer expires after November 30th. So if you've been considering being a member and you love a good deal, join up today at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. And now for this week's guest, Siri Dahl. Oh, gosh. So just a little bit of backstory. Many of y'all know, I'm sure by now, that I once upon a time did a little porno called Team BJ2 with Sarah J and Siri way, way back then. Sarah J was on the podcast episode 22. You can hear more about Team BJ2 over there. And not that long afterwards, Siri retired from porn. Many of us were sad, many of us downtrodden. And then late last year, early this year, we find out, we see on the interwebs, Siri is back and she has risen from the ashes, from her pornographic ashes. She has returned as an adult entertainment phoenix. She is now Siri Dahl, spelled D-A-H-L. She's even got her own podcast now called After Adult. And I was so thrilled that we were able to get her on the show. So let's go listen in to what it's like to leave porn and then return to porn on your own terms, with Siri Dahl. The Man Whore Podcast is thrilled to be sponsored by AltPlayground.net, the place to go for your next non-monogamous adventure. Although with, cases going up around the country, it's where you're going to go to start planning your next non-monogamous adventure. I might recommend you all hold off on execution for a little bit. But that's the great thing about APG is they are making it so easy to connect with like-minded people in the lifestyle virtually. Yeah, my favorite feature is something called the Big Wall. And the Big Wall each day has like a new theme, and then users get to post some sexy pictures that fit the theme. Sometimes it's a color, sometimes it's a sex act. I'm still waiting for them to make, you know, puppetry of the penis a theme so we can really have a good time in there. Whether you're swingers, you're poly, you're a single slut, you're a couple that just wants to do a little swapping, hot wife, cuckolding, looking for a daddy dom, or some sort of general non-monogamy, altplayground.net is the place for you. Come join me over there today at altplayground.net. They're even offering a special trial run. I think it's you get 4 days for $3.99 just to test the waters out a bit. So come on by altplayground.net. When you're done listening to this episode with Siri Doll, gosh, you are going to want to probably binge watch all of her porn, everything she's been in, I'm sure. And I know one website that happens to have oh so many of her studio films, from Reality Kings, Brazzers, Vivid, and more, and that's HotMovies.com. Yes, HotMovies.com is a pay-per-minute porn site, and that makes it a more ethical and affordable way to hashtag pay for some of your porn. And they license content from all of your favorite porn stars, all your favorite porn studios, with all your favorite porn categories. They got straight porn, queer porn, kinky porn, bisexual porn. They got it all. And oh boy, do they have a lot of Siri Doll. HotMovies.com is going to give you 20 free minutes on top of any package you sign up for. Yes, that includes the free trial. And you can sign up today at HotMovies.com. Use promo code MANWHORE with any package you sign up for. And then you can go, you know, enjoy it. Luscious Lesbians Exploring Siri, or another acutely titled film, Sirius, spelled S-I-R-I. You got it. Okay. HotMovies.com, promo code MANWHORE. Let's go chat with Siri. Welcome, Siri Doll. And I guess welcome back to the biz. As it seems to be you picked a great time to come back.
Feel I like did, yeah.
I think you should have either waited a year or done it a year sooner, because you just got back into porn like right before everything hit the fan.
I had January and February before COVID hit.
Was it a good January and February? Because that might
be
all.
It was a fantastic 2 months.
What was like? What's your feeling when like things are locking down? Did you think this is going to be short term? Do you think this is going to be long? Are you worried about, you know, the career?
I was worried at first in March, and then I stopped worrying when April rolled around and I realized that April was my best month ever on OnlyFans. I was like, okay, everyone's at home bored. Like, it kind of makes sense in a way, but like porn has always been said to be fairly recession proof. And like, apparently also it's fairly pandemic proof, was what I've found. So, and I'm also saying that from a pretty privileged place of being like a more well-known model. But yeah, like I don't know, like since I'm out way the fuck out in Kentucky when I'm like at home, it's not like I'm surrounded by other porn performers. So it's like, I'm kind of used to being limited when I'm at home and what I can do anyway. So to me, it didn't actually make a huge difference. It just meant that I couldn't have any trips out to LA for a while. But I definitely was like, man, like I just made my big comeback and like, I want to shoot more for all these big companies, but I can't, you know? So right. It's kind of cool to see how a lot of the big studios have started to, a lot of them are back to shooting now, but back in the spring and the early summer, a lot of the companies were doing home shoot scenes where they'd hire models. So I did like a couple home shot scenes for Brazzers, and I did some for Adult Time. So technically I was still working professionally, like doing stuff that wasn't just for OnlyFans.
Mm. Yeah, and home shot, is that the stuff where it's like you're shooting from home, but like someone's on Zoom or on a phone directing you? Because I saw like Adult Time, we're doing these like lesbian orgy scenes, but like everyone's in their own camera and someone was directing.
I actually never did like a Zoom party scene. Like people were like, oh, are you going to do one? And I was like, I don't know. Like I'm so detached from the industry. Like whoever organizes these, like they didn't invite me. I don't know. Like, which is fine. It seems like kind of, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure that I would have been like super into it. Again, I don't know. I haven't tried it. So
what is a home shot scene?
So essentially, like, Brazzers gave me a script the way that they would give a director a script. And they just said, like, here's what we want. Here's the, like, the specs that we need for your video and your photo and, like, all this stuff. And just here's the intro that we want you to shoot. Here are the positions we'd like to see you do. And just shoot your scene. And then they just gave me a flat, like, budget for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So, did you get, like, a little extra since you kind of also got a direct, or?
Yeah, it's higher pay than just being a performer, because it's, like, you are doing literally all the work on your own. And that makes sense. And actually, still, they're saving a shit ton of money, because, like, even just paying me to do everything, and even, like, my boyfriend performed in that scene with me, so it's, like, they're paying two performer rates, and then they're paying extra on top of it because we're essentially also the crew for everything. And even all of that being said and done, that scene probably still costs Brazzers like less than half as much as a regular scene because it's still like much less of a crew involved.
You think they'll still do this like in a post-vaccine world? Do you still think they'll do that, realizing they can cut some costs? Is Mike Quasar in trouble? That's just all I'm concerned about.
I don't think so. I mean, companies like Brazzers, I don't think so. Because, I mean, their bread and butter is, like, they have a very specific brand. And like, it was cool that they had me do the, like, home shot thing, but I can't recreate what Brazzers does in my own house. Like, there's no way. Like, the angles that they get and, like, the way that things are shot and it's all fucking cartoonish and, like, I just can't achieve that production quality in my house with my iPhone. And they know that. So, like, I don't think they'll be a company that regularly does that. But I do think some companies will actually consider doing more remote content that way because it does save them money, you know? And if there's a model who lives out in the middle of nowhere, like me, which is more and more common these days, it kind of makes it a little more easy.
Why do you think that is getting to be more common? I mentioned when we were off mic, like Venus was on here a few years ago talking about, we're going to go out to Tennessee and make a queer utopia performers out there have a little nub. Like, what's that about?
Honestly, OnlyFans, just internet. So the rise of performers having more of the power in the industry, being able to create and sell directly our own content makes a massive difference. Like, I was a little bit worried when I decided to return to porn because I was like, man, like, I look different now. I'm older. Like, I have all this so much has changed, and, like, is the industry going to welcome me back? Are these big companies even going to want to hire me again? And as soon as I started doing, like, OnlyFans and, like, Snapchat and just all the private socials, basically, I was like, oh, I guess I don't really care if those companies hire me. Like,
who needs them?
I don't need it. In terms of, you know, it's nice. Essentially, it's just, like, advertising for my own brand. Like,
and I mean, that's ultimately what, I mean, that's just what it's going to be, right? It's like, you're not trying to get Brazzers, you know, unless you get one of these big contracts, which seem to be so few and far in between. It's like, you do a Brazzers scene, it's just to say, come to my OnlyFans, come to my clip store.
And that being said, like, it's always like, what do you want? Like, as a performer, what are your goals? What are my goals? Because, like, I know that there are definitely porn stars out there who, they want the big contract. Like, for them, having a career in porn is about, you know, they have a particular goal in mind of what they want. Like, maybe they want to win a lot of awards. They want a contract. They want to be, like, incredibly famous and well-known and, like, really leave their mark on the industry. And that's never really been one of my goals. My attitude has always been like, oh, well, it'd be nice, you know. I wouldn't necessarily turn it down if someone offered me a contract, but I also realize that that doesn't happen by accident. Like, people who get contracts work very hard for them. And it's never been a priority of mine. Winning awards has never been a priority of mine. I'm just kind of like, I'm going to do whatever I want. And if people like it, cool.
Well, I'll get to the return in a second, but, like, what are your goals? And I would also add to that, were your goals different when you started porn versus now?
Yeah, I think when I started porn, I didn't actually know what my goals were. I think a lot of it was just, like, I wanted to explore, and I was very curious to learn more about the industry. And I knew I wanted to make a career of it and to have some longevity, but when I was brand new, I didn't really know what that meant or what it could or would look like. And now that, you know, I've had years away from the industry and then come back and now, you know, still have a pretty big loyal fan base, my goals have definitely shaped up a little more. Like, I think one of my biggest goals is just that I want to continue to, like, carve out my own niche, right? Like, I have, like I said, really loyal fans who...
Yeah, they stayed on that Twitter account for a long time.
They stayed on the Twitter, the Reddit, the subreddit, like... continued to grow after I retired, and the subreddit was actually one of the things that made me want to come back. When I saw how many people were still subbed to it, I was like, that is wild. Like, I didn't ever expect that.
Can I say, you know, as a Reddit person myself, after you retired, when you would pop up the subs that I tend to check in, my porn subs, you happen to show up in a lot. So I'd be like, oh, there's Siri. Hope she's doing all right. It's just, hope she's finding what she wants to find.
Pour
out
some
there.
For your homie.
Yeah, it's just, I'm gonna just drop a load for this one. No, although R.I.P. Betty Dotson, I feel like I do need to drop a load honor. You know, like we should all come for Betty once today.
Come for Betty today.
But so Siri, you and I both have, I think, extremely similar porn career trajectories, because after we shot that Team BJ 2 with Sarah J, I retired from the porn industry. It was my debut and my retirement. But I have now, like a beautiful phoenix, reemerged with an OnlyFans as well. And you left the industry not long after that shoot. And, you know, what was that about? I heard inklings, but I didn't know what to believe or this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, what happened? Why'd you go?
I mean, to be honest, it was a mix of things. And if I had to boil it down to really, like, one, I could boil it down to two major
factors. You don't have to boil it down to anything. We got time.
I'd prefer to boil it down, because it could potentially be a very long and, like, convoluted story. So basically, as you know, because you met him on the set of Team BJ2, I used to be married. And so that was one half of it. And then the other half was, well, the half of the marriage thing being I was very unhappy in that relationship and really wanted to leave it, but he was very involved in business.
He was the director of that shoot.
Not the director, no. He was just he was assisting with it. I mean, I guess you could say the director was Rocker Dave, you know, who does everything with V&A and Vicky Vet. Like, he kind of put it together more. And then Sarah J did a lot of the work organizing it too.
But what was going on with that relationship? How long had y'all been together?
Oh, we were together for 3 or 4 years, I want to say, by the time I retired from porn. So we were together since before I started in porn. But it just wasn't a healthy relationship. It was really, like, codependent, and I was very young when I met him. And after being together for as long as we were, and he was also, like, twice my age, by the way, so that wasn't helpful for me personally.
Allow me to put on my shocked face.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very good shocked face. I can tell how shocked you are.
So shocked.
So the age difference, it ultimately, to me, became a problem. I'm not sure he ever felt like it was a problem. Probably not. But to me, I was just like, nah, I'm not into this anymore. Like, you know, and it just, yeah, it was, he was a little manipulative too. Like, you know, and I don't need to go into too much detail there, but that's what codependency looks like. You usually have someone who's a little manipulative, and it just wasn't great for my mental health. And then feeding into that as well was the fact that, like, I basically hadn't spoken to anyone in my family for 3 years since I started porn. Like, I was kind of excommunicated from my family. And it just left me in a very terrible mental state. And it got to a point where it was so bad that I was, like, suicidal. And I realized I need to drastically change my life if I'm going to literally, like, live. And the thing that I knew had to go, the main thing was, like, I need to get out of this relationship. And I actually was really happy with my choice to do porn. And I'd never felt like porn was a cause of my problems, aside from my family not wanting to talk to me because of porn. But that's just stigmatization. Like, I realized, I was like, I think I can fix that. Like, they just hate it, but they don't have enough information.
Did you tell them that you were getting into porn, or did they find out?
They found out, which is never a good thing. When I talk to younger girls now who, like, think they can hide it, I'm like, bitch, no. Like, you have to tell people. Like, they're going to find out in the worst way, and it's so much worse if people just find out through the grapevine.
You don't know what porn your dad watches. It's like, you don't just get it out the way.
My parents didn't find out like that, fortunately. They found out because, like, someone who knew one of my friends found out through that grapevine and then told my sister, who told my parents. So, it was a whole thing.
Yeah, and what was that phone call like?
My parents assumed that I was being trafficked by my ex. They literally assumed that I was, like, not consenting. They were like, oh my god, he's put you on drugs. And I, no matter how many times over the years I tried to explain to them, this is something I wanted before I ever met him. Like, this is a choice that I made. Yes, he supports it, and I'm sure that you're confused by him supporting it, but, like, this was entirely my choice in the first place, and my parents never understood that. And I don't think they ever really believed it until I told my mom I was going back into porn.
There's no one to blame.
Yeah, exactly. There was no one else to blame. And I think finally it sunk in, like, oh, she's very serious about this.
Mm-hmm. And that's before, though, you're defending that. Like, no, I wasn't trafficked. No, I'm not being manipulated to do this. But you're saying that, right, I'm assuming before you realized that you were in a codependent relationship, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I didn't realize.
So do you look back now that you recognize that? Would you look back and still full-throatedly give that defense, or would you say that there was some percentage of him who kind of pushing you in a direction?
No, I still wouldn't say that. Like, even though he was definitely, like, manipulative in some ways, they weren't really, he didn't try to control my porn career. Like, it's okay. kind of, there's a lot more nuance to it than I think people understand. Just from hearing, oh, there was a porn star who was married to someone that, like, they had a bad relationship. Sure. Usually the assumption is like, oh, he was controlling everything. He was telling her who to shoot with.
Well, I like to think I pay attention at least to the space, and I've got friends in the space, and I, you know, you listen to this podcast, you read this Twitter thread. It is something that we do hear about. The older boyfriend who starts to kind of micromanage your career, especially if he had nothing to do with it beforehand, and then all of a sudden, so that is the horror story we hear. And so I think, at least for me, you know, I come with that question, usually I have a place of concern at first, not because you can't have agency, but because I know that that does happen. And then that's only, like, porn set I had, like, done. So I thought, like, that was such a cool, awesome experience. And then, in a similar way, where you might hear that someone didn't enjoy a sexual encounter the way you did, you go back and be like, oh, fuck, there's something not on the up and up there. And then it's not just about, like, tarnishing, like, your good memory, but now you're like, oh, fuck, was I participating in something, you know, someone didn't want to do?
Oh, yeah. And so what's funny is I actually have to give this disclaimer a lot to people who I worked, like, specifically in, like, mid to late 2014. That was the time when I was probably at my most depressed that I've ever been in my life.
Oh, gosh.
And, like, going to work, like, being on set was literally my reprieve from being so depressed about my personal life and not talking to my family and, like, being in this relationship that I just couldn't fucking stand anymore. And I just, so it's funny because being at work and being on set was, like, my happy place. Mm-hmm. So it's, And I just say that to, again, reinforce that, like, it was never an issue with porn. Like, porn was never the problem. In fact, it was a lot of the time the thing that helped me. But even then, I don't know if, like, this is pretty commonly said about people who have been through any sort of trauma, that you have memory loss associated with trauma. And because I was so depressed and, like, I was in this relationship that was really emotionally abusive and manipulative, I just don't remember huge chunks of that, like, 6-month period. Like, it's wild. Like, I've like actually, like, talked to people who I thought I didn't work with, and I was like, wait, I did work with them. Oh my god. Like, I just have significant memory loss. Oh. And I didn't even smoke weed back then. I do now. But, like, so I can't even say that it was, like, stoner, like, you know, foggy brain memory. It was literally just that I was so depressed. My brain wasn't cataloging anything.
Oh, gosh. And I would have thought you would just, like, forget dicks because there's just too many to keep track of in a long enough career. Like, nope. I mean, because, like, do you, outside of that period of time, do you sometimes just, like, forget you shot with a person?
No, not really. Yeah. Yeah, like, now that I've been back for about a year, everything I've done in the past year, I have crystal clear memory of.
Okay. I appreciate the... I appreciate you not wanting people to, like, think, well, it was a porn relationship, so the porn was the problem. Because, like, and I know you have some background in this here and there, but it's like, I'm polyamorous. And if a relationship ends, they always think it was the poly. But, like, you know, the current relationship I'm in almost came to an end during this quarantine. And the only reason would have been because of COVID. Like, it was a period. So it was like... The issues tend to never be at all about the poly part. It's about we could have not been non-monogamous and this thing still would have been an issue, right? Like that's so I see a similarity with porn where it's like, it could be, and there's things to look out for. But other than that, it might be because, you know, the person's selfish or manipulative or fucking, I don't know, comes on your rug, which apparently I did. I'm in big trouble right now because I came on my girlfriend's rug.
Oh my God.
I'm an animal, I guess. I don't know. I felt like we've come on other things together.
Really?
Seriously, none of the men I've ever shared this with in the last 24 hours, none of them seem to understand why this is a big deal. But every woman has said, Billy, can't come on rugs. I'm like, okay, sorry. Anyway.
So, yeah, I don't know. I've never had someone come on my rug. I don't know how I'd react. I guess it's like which rug in which room. Like, that's my question.
My thing is like, did I stain it? Because then I'm an asshole. If I didn't stain it and you just saw a video that I took that I shared, then I'm sorry. But okay, so that time period is really foggy. And then you kind of come out of the fog. And what's the impetus to, you got out of the relationship first and then porn, right?
Yeah, so essentially they were so closely intertwined because my ex was like essentially my assistant. Like he, for the last 2 years or so that I was doing porn, he didn't actually work full time anywhere. Like I was making enough to support us both. And honestly, I needed the help. Like I was overwhelmed a lot of the time with fan interactions and like email responses and like, and I was representing myself and I didn't have an agent. So like I needed help with responding to booking requests. And so he did a lot for me and with me and was like essentially a part of the business. So because he was so wrapped up in all that, like I literally couldn't see. I was like, the relationship itself is codependent. Like he's everywhere in I live with him. We're together in a relationship. Like I work with him basically. Like he's almost one half of the business that I'm running currently. And like, I didn't have close personal friends. Like I didn't ever get super close to anyone that I met in porn. So I only had like two or three friends that lived back in Texas that I never got to see ever. And my whole family didn't talk to me. So he was the only person in my life for like 3 years. That's my garage downstairs opening up. Probably my neighbor.
That's all right.
So that's a very loud sound. Sorry.
And yeah, no, I'm sorry to hear that was like what, you know, that's what it was. I heard the first inkling of that and was like, and that made me sad because, you know, you seem like a very bright, happy, chipper lady when I met you. You were quite good at hiding the sadness.
Yeah, I've always been very good at hiding. Masking is, you know, what my therapist called it. She was like, you're so good at masking. Because I remember when I started going to a therapist and it was very expensive and I was paying basically a couple $1,000 a month to see this woman 2 times a week. And I did that for about 2 months or so before I even got into the fact that I was depressed. Like I literally just went to a therapist 2 times a week for a couple months, paying a ton of money to sit there and be like, yeah, here's what I did today. Here's what I ate for breakfast. Life is great. And just pretend nothing was wrong. Because I was that dissociated, essentially, from myself.
And how did it feel to break free of that relationship?
Oh, fantastic. It was like a huge weight being lifted from me. And so, yeah, to get back, because you had asked, like, you know, that I left the relationship and then left porn. And they kind of happened congruously, like, basically at the same time. I had decided I was going to leave that, like, you know, ask for a divorce in December of 2014. And that is also when I moved to Kentucky. And then, like, I didn't actually announce immediately that I was retiring from porn because I knew that I had a bunch of scenes that had been filmed that hadn't yet released, and I thought it would just confuse everyone. So I was like, I'm just going to wait until everything that I know was on the books, like, actually rolls out, and then I will formally say that I'm retiring. And that ended up being, like, February 2015 or something. Mm-hmm. But by the time I actually said I was retired, I had, in effect, literally been retired and living totally far away from LA and, like, not doing anything for several months.
Mm-hmm. And why Kentucky? Because it's not like you're from there, so is that, why go there?
That's a great question that I won't answer.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you for taking care of yourself. I love it when I ask a question, someone says I'd rather not. So you're in Kentucky.
What I will say is I really like it here.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't plan on leaving anytime soon.
All right. And what spawned you coming back? Because you were gone for like 5 years, almost five years. Yeah. Like
I was gone longer than I was ever in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's wild. And it didn't feel like it was longer because I guess time when you're working in porn, because it consumes so much of your life, it feels like time moves differently, and it felt like I was in the industry for a lot longer than 3 years. I remember having like when I hit that over 3 year mark of having left the porn industry, I remember having like one of those on this day throwback things on my iPhone and being like, holy shit, I've been out of porn longer than I was ever in it, and that feels weird because that was a very formative part of my life.
Yeah. And you weren't doing, were you during that off time, were you still doing like an OnlyFans type stuff or nothing?
I mean, everything was shut completely down. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there was still, for a while there remained a Twitter account that I didn't run. And it even said that like in the bio, like obviously I don't run it. But essentially it just fell to my former webmasters. So VNA,
mm-hmm.
like Vicky Vett and her company, because they ran my website. Sure. Back when I had that.
Were you ever tempted to just be like, oh, I could do a little camming, just a little here and there? No.
No, I was very final. I was like, when I decided I was going to retire, I was like, this is for life. I am completely done with this. Mm-hmm. So I was so far removed from it, and I was working like a regular, like a civilian job, you know, and quite happy, honestly. Like, mm-hmm. So it was easy for me to be like, nah, I'm done with that.
Well, that's also how you were able to find the happiness outside. I was, because part of me was thinking, like, well, what do you do during that time? Like, what, you pick up some hobbies? Like, you know, you said you worked a civilian job, and just what's kind of life like knowing this world? I mean, it's such a drastic shift. It's not like you mm-hmm. left a career in banking and then just went to go, you know, do something else. Like, I mean, you left a very public facing sexual job. And so what's that like to, one, not be in it? Because it's kind of crazy. It's a crazy lifestyle, similar with comedy. It's there's a lot going on all the time. Mm-hmm. To find, like, was it calmer? Was it a calmer way to live?
It was like
I
hit a reset button. Because some of the, like, there are some issues that I had with, so here's the issues that I did have with my porn career before I left. I felt like I wasn't actually accurately representing myself for a long time. So, and that's kind of weird, I think, for my fans to hear, because a lot of my fan base really misses the like first year Siri where I had the blonde hair and I was a little bit heavier. And like they love that version of me. But what I think a lot of fans don't understand, and maybe they don't care, and that's fine. They don't have to. That wasn't that was a very like, what's the word? I can't think of the damn word I want right now, but it was a very like, I don't feel, when I looked in the mirror at that point in my life, I felt like I'm dressing up like a porn star. I mm-hmm. felt like this is how I normally look, like the bleach blonde hair, the stupid bob haircut. Every time I went to a set, half the time the director would see my hair and be like, oh, we have to give you the Marilyn Monroe treatment. And they would curl my hair. And I was like, I fucking hate this.
It's
like,
so hacky. So hacky.
Because I had literally 1 year before I started porn, I was in college with a, like, dating a woman looking like a straight up, like, baby butch. Like, I am, and I don't know, and I always harped on about how I'm bi, but, like, the porn industry just kind of, like, made me feel like I have to find a brand. Like, I have to look a certain way, and I have to, like, fulfill this very, like, male gaze fantasy.
So right, you couldn't look the way that you looked and be like a queer porn star, in a way.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of where my ex's influence did come in, because originally when I said I wanted to do porn, what I specifically wanted to do was just shoot for like crash pad series and be a queer porn star.
I love crash pad series. I think it's so cool.
Yeah.
So
and so but my ex was like, he was like, I think you're shooting too low. Like, I think you could honestly be a really, really like well-known famous porn star if you wanted to be. Like, you're gorgeous. You have all of this potential. Like, if you're going to do it, why not just like do it, you know? And so he kind of did change my goals in that way. Like, he got to me a little bit, but I don't fault him for, like, I don't necessarily think that was a bad thing. Like,
yeah, you're still encouraging, you're saying, ah, oh, if you want to be the, you know, we assume everybody wants to be at it. We all assume that the top looks the same for everybody.
Right. And So yeah, I don't have a problem with that. It's just that I, in 2012, when I started in porn, and especially because when I started out, I went to an agent, which was LA Direct Models, or Derek Hay, whatever you want to call him, who's a terrible human being. but it was kind of like starting in the way that I did, and like having this agent didn't really give me any room to like explore my appearance or like create like a quote unquote brand as a porn star that more closely fit what I feel like I actually am. Mm-hmm. So that's why my appearance changed so much over 3 years. I was trying to find what I felt like reflected who I actually am. And I got pretty close to it. You know, that's why I did the bright red hair. I was trying to like kind of kill the original Siri. I was like, I don't like this. This is not me.
And do you think you're embracing that now? Do you feel like you are yourself when you're on screen?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and that's why I actually just tweeted something earlier today about it, because I was like going through and responding to some Reddit comments, and I get a little salty when I see so many guys being like, oh, I miss your boobs before reduction. And salty in a way that like I don't care.
How dare you have your body different than you want to?
Yeah.
How dare you?
It's kind of just like, so I tweeted something about it, and I get a lot of responses that are like, oh, don't let them get to you. You're still beautiful. And I'm like, yes, I know. They're not getting to me. They're like annoying. They're just, it's like, I guess I just don't understand the like being upset that someone changed their appearance. Like, are you going to be upset that I don't look 24 when I'm 32? Like, Shut the fuck up.
And even if you want to be upset about it, I think you can be upset about a lot of things. To air that discontent and then at the person, what do you hope to accomplish there? Oh, yeah, I'll go dye my hair blonde again. Sure, because you, avatar, egg avatar. Yeah, like, just for you, because you wanted it.
When it comes to the comments about the breast reduction, I'm just going to rant for a second here, because I'm actually like,
Do you want to set people up that you had a breast reduction?
Oh, yeah. I had breast reduction surgery in 2016. So, like, about exactly a year after I retired from porn. And I don't want to go into all the detail about, like, people always ask, like, why did you do it? It's like, because I wanted to. And I always wanted to. And I don't know why that's hard for, sometimes people find that so unbelievable. But no, I wanted to do it since I was 16. I just needed to get to a place where I was, like, ready for it. Mm-hmm. So I had it done several years ago. And there are comments that I see that I like find hilarious. Like, probably one of the top ones is like, what a terrible surgeon. He really botched the job. And yeah, no, I see some really mean stuff.
What's crazy is a lot of them want to fuck the porn stars that they're talking to. And then like, even though it's this unattainable thing, unless they escort on the sides, it's like,
I'm a mod on my own subreddit. So like they don't realize that, like, I am the one filtering the comments that they're leaving about me. They think that they are just commenting to some other bros. And I'm like, no, I'm literally the one that sees this first, dude. Like, delete comment.
But it's like these same dudes will say it to, like, women on Tinder. And then I'm like, what part of this makes you think they'll fuck you because you said, like, why do you think this is going to help what you think you could achieve? It's like, I don't know. It always astonishes me when I see, like, screenshots of, like, oh, you look really great. You should lose like this. Or, oh, you look great. You should dye your hair this, though. And I'm like, what makes you think she wants to fuck you now?
Yeah. Look, I've started to say that I'm just going to Steve Jobs this shit because I don't care what porn fans think they want, because they all think they want either the same thing that they've always seen or something that's completely different than what that person actually is. Like, it never really reflects the truth of, like, who a person is. So, like, when I see these comments about dudes being like, I wish you had blonde hair. Like, I'm mad that you got breast shortening surgery. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do. And whoever wants to see it will come find it and they will mm-hmm. like it. And if you do not want to see it, there are literally thousands of other porn stars out there who mm-hmm. have big natural tits, who haven't had breast reduction surgery and never will because they're happy with their big natural tits. I'm not your girl.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be your girl. I don't know why it's so hard.
And I don't want to ask, like, what's the brand now as much as, like, who is Siri now? Because it sounds like you want to try to overlap it to something more authentic. Which, I mean, as a small side note, so during the Team BJ, there was, like, you and Sarah J. And Sarah J., mm-hmm. great, hot. Does great porn work and everything, but like you had a very much more authentic vibe to you. Like mm-hmm. you look like someone I could meet at the bar and possibly have gotten a blowjob from. And I was like, yeah, I want to go with that one. Who needs the porn star fantasy? Give me the fantasy of someone being interested in me. That's the one I like.
That's my favorite. The fantasy of being desirable.
Who is Siri? Who is Siri now?
I'm just me. Like, I haven't, my personality is still literally the same that it's always been. I think a huge difference, in as far as like, for the purpose of like branding right. myself as a porn star is the fact that I've been super, a big proponent of powerlifting now. And I've started like sharing powerlifting videos on my Instagram and stuff. And I think that's really cool. And it's also fantastic for marketing because there's a huge, like, there's a massive overlap of people who are power lifters who watch a lot of porn because a lot of the time it tends to be men between like 20 and 40.
Mm. You also fall in that spot of like the power lifters, but they don't want the woman who's like shredded. Like the yeah, one who has like the 18
like a thick girl who's like strong or strunk, as I like to say. But you know,
like someone who could deadlift me. Like that's
how much do you weigh?
Oh, that's a personal question where, you know, I haven't had carbs today for a reason.
Well, if you weigh less than 264 pounds, yes, I could deadlift you.
Solid, yes.
I'm pretty sure you weigh less than 264 pounds.
So far, yes. Quarantine did a number, but, you know, we're working on it.
It's fine. You know what? I think we're all in the boat together. So
what were the steps to getting back in? When did you first think, I think I want back into that world?
It was... trying to think of when I had the real inkling. So going back to like the summer of 2018, I had been in a long-term relationship and it ended kind of messily and it was really rough. And I was like, I don't want to date anyone for a while. Like, cause I'd been a little bit of a serial monogamist for like a couple years after I moved out here. And that didn't feel like it was right for me. Like it took me a while to learn that, but I was like, why am I trying to like be monogamous with these guys that I don't even really like that much. This is weird. So I had a period where I was like, I'm just going to be single. I'm just going to do me. And I just need to like really like sit down and think about my goals and what I want to do. And I realized I had so much to say and that I wanted to really like almost vent about my experiences in porn. Basically in a way to, because I like a lot of my friends in my personal life would ask me questions about it all the time. Cause I've always been open with people like, this is what I used to do. Like, you know, especially with like men that I dated, I would like tell them immediately.
How many said, I know? Did anyone know already?
No one.
No.
Yeah. They would know. And then they would lie and say they didn't know. Cause they thought that I would think they're a pervert for watching porn. I'm like, I made the porn. Why would I think you're a pervert for watching the porn? You fucking weirdo.
You probably paid for this dinner in a way. So why?
Yeah. So I think it was, I was just single for a while. So I didn't like have a guy that I was dating who I was trying to like appease by like not talking too much or like reminiscing about having done porn. Cause just like you do, like you'd be like, this one time, like at my job a couple years ago, like, let me tell you this funny story. And like, I couldn't do that because if I like the guy I was dating would be like, oh, I'm uncomfortable now. Like you just reminded me that you used to do porn. And I'm like, that was like a year ago that I did that. And it was a huge part of my life. Like you can't ask me to pretend it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So I had all this, I just wanted to vent it. And that's why I started my podcast after mm-hmm. adult. And so originally when I started my podcast, it was literally just me in my bedroom being like, I'm just going to very awkwardly tell some stories about porn, and I was doing it anonymously. But I only sent the links for the podcast to, like, my personal friends. I didn't ever intend to have a podcast that I actually, like, put effort into. It was like, I'm just going to do a couple episodes and, like, tell these stories because people in my real life are interested and they always ask me about it. And here's a way I can just be completely uncensored and let it all out. Mm. And I enjoyed fucking doing the podcast so much. And it was really nice to give myself an outlet to talk about my experiences in a way that I knew I wasn't being judged, right? Because I was more that I wasn't judging myself in a way. So it's kind of weird to hear, but like one of the things that I definitely did when I retired from porn was like, I did allow other people's judgments to get to me a little bit. Like I started to feel kind of guilty about having done porn, and that felt weird. And it definitely caused some like conflicting feelings within me.
Has that faded away now?
Yeah, by now? It has.
And why?
It was never truly how I felt. It was just that when people just project their stigma and their judgments onto you, it's very hard to kind of let that bounce off.
Mm-hmm. What? How do you think you got over that?
Concern? By doing my podcast for sure. And but that's kind of one of the that's one of the main reasons I wanted to do it, was to just own it and be like, hey, I did this. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to tell the stories about it and my experiences. And if you don't like it, then fuck off and you don't have to listen to it. And you don't have to be my friend, because I don't care. I don't want someone who dislikes that part of my life to be my friend. Like, so
yeah, that's why I thought that would have been like a deal breaker, or almost like a filtration system for dating, is like, let them know that you did porn. They react poorly. Mm-hmm. You never wanted to date them in the first place. That's
exactly. Which is why I would always tell, if I dated someone, I would tell them immediately, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was usually a fairly good filter. But I did the podcast for like 9 months. And then in that 9 months, you know, my co-host Rachel came on board. She's like one of my best friends. And so she started doing it with me, and it was just super fun, and we were getting super into it. And it was after like 9 months of doing the podcast and just feeling like I have an avenue to be open and talk about these things. And it wasn't just reminiscing about porn. It was like discussing things that are very blatantly sexual in like a public way and feeling comfortable doing that. And that is one of the biggest things that I missed about porn, is what I started to realize. So it was just through doing my podcast that I was like, man, I really miss this. Like I actually miss the industry, and I've pretended, or I haven't allowed myself to feel that feeling of missing it, because I've honestly just wanted to like please my family because they hated that I did it so much.
Yeah. And what were like the steps to getting back in? Like, do you have to, you got to call somebody, be like, can I get that password?
I just made an OnlyFans. I made a private Snapchat, and then I made an OnlyFans. Hmm. And I posted on the subreddit, the Siri Pornstar subreddit, like, hey, it's actually me. Like, I did like a verification photo, but I posted on there and I was like, hi, I've resurfaced. And of course, instantly they all like shat their pants. And then I made, you know, and then I ventured into making an Instagram and a Twitter again. And so I just really started on social media and like doing OnlyFans and stuff. And then I was doing that for 6 months. So, cause that was like in June. It was actually on my birthday. It was my 31st, right? Yeah, my 31st birthday, June 2019 was when I did that. And so 6 months later in January 2020 was when I went out and shot for Brazzers, and then did the AVN Awards and everything. So yeah, that was it was a quick 6 months. It was wild.
Yeah. Has your return, like, has there been, is it been a notable thing, or does it just feel like, yep, back at that job, back doing the regular thing?
It feels different in like the best way, but in some ways it is a little bit the same. Like, so kind of like the daily grind of being a content creator hasn't changed much. It's very similar to what I used to do back in 2014 before I retired. It's like I wake up and I basically just wade through all my DMs and like emails every day. So in 2014 though, I wasn't an OnlyFans, so that part was different. Sure. It was almost like all my fan interactions were in email form, and like, you know, I was doing like a lot of custom video requests and stuff back then. And these days it's more almost entirely of like OnlyFans based. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like as soon as we get off this interview, I'm going to go look at my own, because I gave away like free trials to my OnlyFans all weekend. So I got so many new subscribers that my inbox has blown up with like 300 unread messages. So that'll be fun.
And how has the work on yourself been? Like, what, you know, how where are you now compared to then? Is there anything you still feel like you got to work on? Is the codependency still an issue?
No, it's like the opposite. It's so funny. Like,
he's codependent on you?
No. I mean, it's like, it's the opposite and like very not codependent at all, which is what I want. And I don't think, I'm not naturally a person who would default to be codependent on someone in a relationship. It's just that my first really, really long-term serious relationship was with that ex, mm-hmm. He had codependency issues. I didn't even know what that was when I met him. And he actually did tell me at one point, he was like, he used to be like Codependence Anonymous or something. Like he actually like realized that it was a thing that he did, but even realizing that he still was doing it with me. And like, I didn't know enough, or I didn't know the signs, you know? And also I think just with an age gap that large, like there's kind of a default setting where like the person who's older, especially an older man, has more power. Like even if he's not trying to take that power, I just found myself naturally sort of deferring to him in a way that I was like, I don't like this. This doesn't feel right, but I don't know how to not do this. And also, I don't even really love you. Like, this relationship needs to end. But
the battles with depression, that's been making progress.
Yeah, I've actually talked about this publicly on like the podcast and other things too, about that I'm a huge proponent for like therapy, medication. Like, I've actually been on antidepressants since I was 16. So the fact that I was super depressed in 2014 is like nothing new to me. It's just that was probably the worst it had ever been. But I don't actually remember a time in my life since puberty when I haven't felt depression. Mm-hmm. It's genetic, honestly. It truly is. Like, my dad has battled with mental illness like his whole life. It's on both sides of my family. There's just a lot of depression, anxiety, you know. Got some other more serious stuff on some sides of the family too. So I've always accepted that. I'm like, okay, it's fine. It doesn't mean that I can't be super happy and like enjoy my life, but I am on I take an SSRI antidepressant every day, and it took me a really long I'm saying over 10 years to find a medication that actually worked for me. But I finally found one and I'm like, this is the fucking bomb. Like, I take it every day. I don't get any weird side effects. You know, it's nice.
That's great. And where are things at with the family now?
Back to normal. As normal as they'll ever get, I suppose. Yeah. I'm actually really close with my mom. I'm like closer with my mom than I ever have been in my life. And it's fantastic. And like, we just text each other little stupid memes all day. Like, it's great. And she was pissed when I told her I was going back into porn. Pissed. Yeah. With like all caps. Mm-hmm. She was so fucking disappointed. And it felt awful disappointing her. But I'm also like, I can't make my life choices just to please you when we don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, especially not this issue, you know? And I made it clear to my parents. I was like, my big thing with going back into this field is I need you guys to know that I'm an adult and I am capable of making my own decisions and I am safe. Like, you guys don't understand what porn is like. I think they have this idea. It's like boomers, right? They have this idea that everyone in porn is like just disease ridden and like, oh God, it's just a free for all. And everyone's like snorting lines of cocaine off each other all the time. I'm sure there are some porn sets that function that way. None that I've been on specifically. But like, we have a testing system. It's pretty fucking effective. Like, I've never had any major issues with that. Never had any major health concerns. Like, I know how to protect myself. I know my body. I respect my body. So I had to like give my parents this whole speech about like, don't worry about that. Right? Like, if you
there's guys other things concerns, to worry about, but like that one's right. On
that's
lock.
Not the one. That's not the one. Worry about other shit. But I just had to tell her, I was like, if you need to promise me that if you have a specific concern or if you see or hear something about the porn industry that you don't understand that makes you worry for me, you need to come to me and you need to ask me about it. Mm-hmm. I can give you resources. please do not Google what to do if your kid is in porn. Like, you're just going to find these predatory fucking, like, weird Christian anti-porn organizations that basically spout bullshit. And, like, which I'm pretty sure is what my mom did way back in 2012, and that's why she thought I was being trafficked. Like, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had to give them a whole speech, and they were, like, disappointed, but it just came down to them being like, you know what? I think specifically what my mom said was, like, I don't understand it. Or, no, she was like, I don't like it, and I definitely don't support it. But I will try to understand it. I will try to understand why this is your choice. And that's the best I can do. And I was like, that is massive progress. Thank you very much. I think it makes a big difference that I'm an adult now. And I've been living on my fucking own for a long time. Yeah. And they know that. So it's just like, you know.
Yeah. And because the porn interest, I mean, the porn, quote unquote, issue, especially back then when you were like in your mid 20s, is like it's being compounded by that overall parental concern of just you being able to provide for yourself and being, you know, telling your parents you're pursuing comedy for a living is not usually considered this like fully supported decision.
Right. But they're like, you're so young. What are you doing? Like, that's not going to give you a future. That's, you know, that was a huge concern. They were like, my mom actually still, she said something to me. She was like, but you're in your 30s. What are you going to do when you're over 40? No one wants to see that. And I was like, Mom, if you think people don't want to see people over 40 doing porn, then you don't know what you're talking about, woman. Like,
I am waiting. I sit in front of a framed poster of Susan Sarandon every day. Don't you dare tell me over 40
is
nothing.
Susan Sarandon is hot as fuck.
Right?
Now, there are so many porn stars who are over 40, pushing 40, in their late 30s, doing fucking phenomenally.
You got Nina Hartley out there being a perennial goddess.
But I think she's probably about 40. And like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, look at Joanne Angel. Yeah. Nina Hartley. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about the age thing. Like, fuck that. I don't care.
but it seems like they've seen the light to accept their daughter, who she is, and that that she's happy, unless you're masking right now, in which case, great job.
I think it makes a massive difference for them to see me. They've actually seen it, like the proof is in the pudding, right? Or whatever that saying is. They see me on a regular basis functioning better than I have in a long time, because I'm like actually finally feel like my life is put together in a way that I wake up and I'm like excited about what I do for a living, and I'm excited about who I surround myself with. And it's kind of like all the pieces slowly falling into place.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a very long time.
Well, I'm glad that you're getting there. And like I said, you seem very happy. And I'm happy about that. I always prefer when porn stars are happier than not.
Yeah, isn't that great?
No one wants to like know that how depressed you are and then like jerk off to it later, because then you have to do some double think.
Speaking of which, feel free to watch Teen BJ 2 and jerk off to it. Because even though, like I said, I was very depressed at that point in my life, but when I was on set, I was like, yes, I can forget about all that. Like, just give me dick.
I told you in the email, the second most common question I get besides how do I find a sex positive therapist is men and women going, how do I get the team beat the porn that you did with Siri? How do I get that?
I love it.
And I just want to be like, it's not that it's not that impressive. I'm not that impressive. Everybody, it's great, great video though. But although I tried to make it work on stage, and one day I'm going to figure out. But there's a moment when I stepped up to you, you put your hands on my chest, and then you look up, and it's in the DVD, which I don't know why they don't cut this, but you just go like, ooh, you smell nice. And then I beamed and went, oh, thank you. And in the nerdiest fucking least sexy, I was like, I must have killed boners at that moment when people get there. But if you really need to see it, everybody, okay. but yes, no, a very fond memory. Also, another fun one was afterwards when y'all are giving out the DVDs. And it's not that like I'm not a fan or something. It's not like I don't enjoy what y'all do, but it's like I wasn't familiar with the two of y'all before I had started putting together an interview request with Sarah J. And before, so while the World Cup tournament was still going on. And
afterward, so I'm surrounded by people who are like fans of you or Sarah or both, like diehard fans. And we got to the end of the line, and you had one DVD left of yours. And there was this kid from Texas who drove out to Vegas. He drove like 8 hours to do this thing. He was like 19. Was it
the guy who had just turned 18?
Yeah.
Maybe he was 21, but he had just like he's like, this is my birthday present or something.
He was
like
a fucking baby. And
he was a literal child. And I was like, oh no.
I had the last DVD in my hand you just gave me. And I was like, nah, dude, you need this. You committed. You have this. I want you to have
that. That's so nice.
But yeah. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me. Quick question. Do you have like an extra maybe 10, 15 minutes for a bonus episode? I understand if you don't.
Absolutely.
All right. So Patreon people, you can hear that tomorrow. But for now, Siri, where can people find you? Where can they find your podcast? Plug away.
You can find me on SiriDoll.com. Siri, D-A-H-L is how doll is spelled. SiriDoll.com. Mm-hmm. And on social media, I'm TheRealSiri.ps on Instagram and TheRealSiriPS on Twitter. And I also do my podcast, which is After Adult. You can find it anywhere you get your podcast, or just go to afteradult.com.
And if you're a Redditor like me, yeah, check out the subreddit. It's quite good.
The subreddit is our Siri porn star.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Siri, thanks so much for chatting. Why don't you go ahead and say goodbye to everybody?
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Oh, how fun was that? I'm glad Siri's back in the scene and on her own terms. And of course, if you want to see our scene together, you're going to have to go out and get Team BJ2 and figure out which white guy I was. You want to see some more of me? You like seeing me get my dick sucked? How about on my OnlyFans? Two nights ago, I posted a video of me at my at-home glory hole with one of my visitors. That was pretty hot, so you can go pay to get that if you're feeling horny for Billy at onlyfans.com/callmebilly. But if you want to tell us what you thought about this week's episode, you know, the best way to do it is to shout it out on the social media. That's how we know how you're vibing, what you're digging, what you're not digging. Shoot us some tags. I'm on Twitter at TheBillyPresida. I'm on Instagram at BillyIsPresida. You got to spell that whole sucker out because I am shadow banned. And you can get yourself some man whore merch and sex positive meme action when you smash the like button on the Man Whore Podcast Facebook fan page. And if you want to send me something longer, you want to send me a little bit more in-depth comment, question, criticism, if you send me your nudes, please cash at me first. You can send it all over to manwhorepod@gmail.com. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to be having our monthly Man Whore Munch with all of my $7 and up fan whores on Patreon. So if you want to join us for that, we're going to be talking about our long-lost loves and lovers, those ones who got away. Oh, I can't wait to hear everybody's stories, and you can join us at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. Oh, I'm so glad we got to talk to Siri. I got to show her that she's on my wall. And I got to thank her for sucking my dick. It was great. Please don't travel for Thanksgiving if you really don't have to. And when you think to yourself that you have to, ask yourself like, yeah, but like, do I have to? You probably don't. Let's try to stop the spread and let's stay slutty. The Man Whore Podcast is sponsored by HotMovies.com. Try out some ethical, paid-for porn for free with none of those hidden fees or secret subscriptions when you sign up at HotMovies.com and use the promo code MANWHORE.